This is the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. On this week's television review, we're crossing over to our New York bureau to find out what's been happening on American comedy TV shows and why a few people were really not so amused. We're joined today by Jesse David Fox, senior editor at Vulture.com. Jesse, welcome to the show. How is New York on this fine day?
It's beautiful. We are having like a bizarre spring in the middle of our fall.
Excellent. I'm sure no one's complaining about that, but it seems, some select few people might have been complaining about the first show that we're talking about today, which is, of course, NBC's long-running comedy program, Saturday Night Live. Before we jump into the specifics of this chat, though, let's hear a bit of a clip of, what might seem to be Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Mr. Trump, we received a lot of questions online about the audio tape that was released last week of you bragging about sexually assaulting women.
Listen, what I said is nothing compared to what Bill Clinton has done, okay? He has abused women and Martha. Anderson, hold on to your nips and your nuts. Because four of those women are here tonight, four of them.
Wait, I'm sorry, who's here? Mistresses? Bill, how could you? How will I go on with the debate? No, I'll never be able to remember my facts and figures now. Oh, Donald, no! Get real. I'm made of steel. This is nothing. Hi, girls.
So we've got Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton there on SNL. Of course, not the real Hillary and Donald. Jesse, what was your verdict on this? Because, I mean, look, walking into this, I looked at the real Donald Trump thinking there's no way anyone can do an impersonation of Donald Trump. He's too larger than life and ridiculous a character in real life for anyone to make him even more ridiculous. Was this successful?
I think what happened when SNL switched who was doing Donald Trump this year and they got Alec Baldwin, and what Alec Baldwin brings is he is also famous. Like, he has a certain gravitas that comes with just being kind of a controversial male celebrity that the other impressionists didn't have. And in terms of like success, the incredible thing about that sketch in particular, even though they've done a bunch of Donald stuff that has been good, and this one was pretty good, was that it bothered Donald Trump. Like, that the actual candidate, the actual person, watched it and found it offensive. I don't know if you have the tweet in front of you, but I do, which is Donald Trump tweeted the next morning, "Watch Saturday Night Live, hit job on me. Time to retire the boring and unfunny show. Alec Baldwin portrayal stinks. Media rigging election." And that is the thing that SNL can do that all the other comedy and late night shows and sketch shows can't do, which is people watch it and it matters, and as a result, it bothers people. And this is a person who is being bothered by a lot of things, but the fact that a comedy show, that a little sketch, you know, that was written over the course of a couple days bothers a person who possibly could be the president of our country is just a tremendous feat of comedy.
I never would have ever suspected in my life that SNL would be involved in rigging the election. So give me a bit of an insight into how important these comedy sketches during election season are, because from what I understand, there are actually a lot of people who can remember who did what character and what impression going back to the elections a long way back, aren't there?
It's something that Saturday Night Live has always been defined by, and it's something where they really pioneered that their impression will alter people's perception of a person. You know, and that dates back from the first season where Chevy Chase did Gerald Ford and made him clumsy just because Chevy Chase was a gifted physical comedian, not because Gerald Ford was clumsy. He was a college football player. And so there's certain impressions along the way. Dana Carvey's George Bush kind of defined how everyone thinks George Bush was. Will Ferrell's George W. Bush was also really big, and also, of course, Sarah Palin, Tina Fey, Sarah Palin. But the thing about some of those, the question always is, does it matter? Does it influence an election? Does it shape people's opinions? Does it just take what everyone's already thinking of a person? Some cast members, even Horatio Sands, who was a cast member, feels that it was SNL that is why George W. Bush got elected in 2000, because, you know, that election was so close and his portrayal was so lovable. Donald Trump seems like he's going to lose, and he'll probably lose regardless of this sketch. So it's a nice relief, but it kind of underlines the impression that everyone already had of a person.
I just keep thinking about Tina Fey's famous quip of, "I can see Russia from my backyard." It almost feels as though she made that quote a hell of a lot more famous than the real Sarah Palin did.
Yeah, I mean, that one was so iconic, partly because It was the first time SNL like basically took a request. People were like, we want to see it. So they're like, sure. And the writing of that was just so sharp because it was Tina and it was Seth Meyers basically wrote those together. And those are like two of the greater comedy writers of the last 20 years. And there's just something about that. We knew so little about Sarah Palin and she made so little sense. And SNL encapsulated her in such a perfect way and didn't even necessarily have to heighten her that much, but just brought out how silly of a character she kind of seemed to be and how desperate of a move it ended up feeling for John McCain to even pick her in the first place.
And how indeed so silly American politics can be at times. That is Saturday Night Live. Of course, it airs on Saturdays at 11:30 p.m. on NBC over in the US. Let's move along now, but sticking to comedy, of course, we'll leave politics behind for now, though. The Good Place is a comedy series written by Michael Schur, the creator of Parks and Recreation, and it explores the afterlife. Let's hear a clip first.
You, Eleanor Shellstrop, are dead.
Cool. How did I die?
Are you sure you want to hear? You were struck by a truck advertising an erectile dysfunction pill called Engorgulate. Funnily enough, the first EMT to arrive was an ex-boyfriend of yours.
Okay, I get it. Thank you.
You're okay, Eleanor. You're in the good place. You are here because you got innocent people off death row.
You are my soulmate.
Cool, bring it in, man. You'll stand by my side no matter what, right?
Of course I will.
I wasn't a lawyer. There's been a big mistake. I'm not supposed to be here.
Jesse, I feel that comedy shows like this one, I suppose they're trying to say something about our real lives by taking us into this make-believe world. They tend to tread a very, very fine line and quite often for me don't really come off that well. What line exactly is this one treading, though? Because just hearing that clip, it doesn't exactly seem obvious.
And that's fair, and I also think the show still hasn't necessarily... I'm not going to come here and tell, like, it definitely has succeeded, and it's definitely like Parks and Rec, and we definitely know what it's doing. It's interesting because it's a show about the afterlife in theory, because it's set in an afterlife place. It's not heaven, but let's say it's a heaven if made up by a bunch of comedy writers. But it's actually a show about morality and what makes someone good or not, which is a very heavy subject for a show to be about. But I actually know a bunch of people in the writing staff, and it's a lot of people that went to Harvard and Yale, so I guess it makes sense. It definitely is trying to be like, okay, when you remove all of these sort of trappings of a society and you're getting down to people at their essences, you know, what makes them good or bad? And that is kind of what the show is trying to tackle, while also kind of exploring what it would mean to have a heaven.
Do you think that it can sometimes fall into that trap of being a little bit too moralizing? Because again, just looking at that fine line analogy I made earlier, that also can be something that doesn't always follow through so successfully, does it?
Yeah, I think it definitely runs the risk of feeling preachy. And even if it doesn't, it does have a problem with feeling too sentimental. And I think for the most part, the show dodges that by two ways. Essentially, you have a protagonist who is not a good person in like a very benign way. And because we're following her, we don't necessarily have her talking about morality and kind of like, oh, it's good to be good for these reasons. And the other thing is the second, or I guess the third lead, or person who on Earth was a philosopher. So his approach to morals is also not necessarily in a sentimental way, but more in a very like technical, philosophical way. So it does make the show more thinky than it is kind of feely, if that helps. So that's kind of how it skirts that. It then ends up having kind of other issues that come from, it's just a very confusing setting because it's not a heaven that we actually understand. There's so many questions and they keep on answering them slowly, but you just kind of want it to settle in and just be a TV show.
Well, that is The Good Place. It's on NBC every Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Now, Jesse, we need to move along to our final program for today. Now, it does seem unavoidable when we talk about US TV at the moment, but we are returning to politics. But more specifically, we're talking about the comedian Amy Schumer and her recent live performance. I was actually quite surprised at when I read this in the news this week. Tell us what happened.
So she had a show in Florida, I believe Tampa, and I'm not sure how many total people went, but let's say it's over 10,000. And the report is that about 200 people left in the middle of it and seemingly as a result of political material that she was doing. She called Trump an orange sexual assaulting fake college starting monster, which is basically like what everyone calls him. But she said that. And then she also, you know, has a bit about gun violence, and she brought a Trump supporter on stage, which actually resulted in some liberal people booing. So it's kind of actually unclear exactly who left and the exact reason. But it seems, you know, some of the people they asked is that it was about politics, is that people didn't like that a comedian that they went to kind of just, you know, I guess, not talk about those things for once and just laugh was then just talking about politics, which I found all very interesting, because I think a lot of people who think of Amy Schumer think of the sketches of her show that are explicitly political. They're not even like subtle. They are like explicitly about a point they're making. And yet, you know, of these people that are coming to see her show, they are disappointed when she then continued that into her stand-up.
It does seem quite curious, but I suppose Amy Schumer has managed to break into this completely different league now with being successful on the big screen as well. It's maybe, is it fair to say that a lot of people attending that show may have been thinking they were going to see the Amy Schumer that was in Trainwreck without really understanding the wider context of what it means to be a politically aware comedian in America during this politically tumultuous period?
I mean, I don't think I've seen a comedian in the last year that hasn't addressed in some way, even people that aren't a political comedian. But it's interesting to realize the divide of Amy Schumer's fan base. I think you assume that everyone knows who she is, but, you know, sketches that are kind of popular online is very different than the people that just kind of go to a comedy show in Florida. And what they kind of were expecting was comedy. I think a lot of people go to comedy shows not necessarily knowing who they're seeing or caring who they see. They're like, oh, I found them funny in that one thing, but doesn't necessarily expect to know more about kind of their personal point of view. Where people who do know even a medium amount about comedy know that every comedian is very specific. So you couldn't just go to a regular show because it's possible to be political or be offensive, or maybe if you like offensive and it's not offensive. And that is kind of a really interesting thing to say about both where Amy Schumer is in her career, where she's now, oh, she's just a name people know, so people go to the show, but also where comedy is, where you have these comedians playing basketball arenas to people who just want to go to comedy shows and not because they necessarily know that much about the people's act.
Perhaps part of this is also that us here in the media do have trouble understanding when we look, I mean, especially for me, looking at this from an international perspective. I'm not in America. I haven't spent a lot of time in America. But when I look at this from the outside, I have a lot of trouble understanding how there can be anyone conscious left in the country who can look at Donald Trump and view him as anything but an orange sexual assaulting fake college starting monster. So I guess part of the trouble that us here in the media, when we report stories like this, is probably that even though the number of people who left Amy Schumer's show was relatively small, the fact that anyone could be offended by such material does strike us as bizarre, doesn't it?
Let's say it's not even they were offended as much as they're like, enough. You know, I imagine conservative Americans, especially, you know, like Florida as being a swing state. So Florida is not, I live in New York. I don't see any ads for the election. I have no idea what's happening. I mean, I know what's happening, but like, I don't see any ads for it on either side because my state is definitely going to go to Hillary. But Florida is a swing state. So you have to imagine these people are seeing ad after ad after every single show they ever watch. And you have to imagine a conservative is aware at this point what people think of Donald Trump. And they just kind of like, they get it already. Even if they're not offended, even if they think a comedian should be allowed to be political, I think they're probably like, we just want to not have to deal with this nonstop because they're in a state where they're constantly being onslaughted by it. You know, I try to be empathetic to the people who left. And, you know, this is, they spent money to go to the show. They probably had a park. There's all these things. And you get that if you are, all your entertainment that you're watching is surrounded by politics, even if it's, if they're watching The Good Place, I imagine there's ads against Trump or for Hillary, that they just probably thought maybe, oh, the person from Trainwreck is just going to be, you know, like talking about sleeping around and drinking, and it was not going to be about anything. And then you go to this show and it's just like another thing. You know, I do feel empathy for those people. But it is also crazy that they just would be unaware that this is the type of comedy that she would be doing.
Well, the fifth season of Amy Schumer's TV sketch show Inside Amy Schumer is probably mostly Trump-free, and it's currently in the making. That brings us to the end of this week's program. Thanks to my guest, Jesse David Fox, joining us all the way from New York City. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. My producer was Holly Fisher and Yolene Goffin, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll be reporting from the Frankfurt Book Fair. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.